Welcome back to Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. In the last quarter century, you could say the way we solve legal family disputes has been turned upside down. It's gone from confrontation toward collaboration, from the courtroom to the conference room. What's expected of family court judges has changed dramatically, as well as the roles of the lawyers who practice before them. And it all has enormous impact on the increasingly diverse families, fewer and fewer of them bound in marriage, who come before the courts. Two Baltimore law professors guide us through this revolution in their new book, Divorced from Reality: Rethinking Family Dispute Resolution. Jane Murphy is professor at the University of Baltimore School of Law. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Janice Singer is professor at the University of Maryland Francis King Carey School of Law. Welcome.
Thank you.
What is the clearest way for people to start to understand what you call a new paradigm in the way the family court works and what it's expected to do?
You captured it well in your introduction when you talked about the move from confrontation to collaboration and also from the courtroom to the conference room. I think a main theme is that conflict and the conflict that's produced by the adversary system is not good for families. It's not good for children. It's not good for separating parents. It's not good for thinking of family functioning moving forward. So there's been a real effort to try to move away from traditional litigation and traditional adversary procedures and traditional zealous gladiator representations towards a more collaborative, interdisciplinary system where lawyers work together with mental health professionals and financial professionals. And so those have been some of the changes, and families have changed more quickly and more dramatically than some of the processes.
And I want to get into that, but let me go back to, you start this book in colonial times when married women had few legal rights. Children were pretty much considered the legal property of fathers. And you say that things then, and even as the law changed and things changed over decades and centuries, that the law and its practice played out differently for wealthy families than for poor families. How so?
Well, that's been true, as you said, from the beginning. Currently, and this is part of the critique in our book, the kind of system that Jana described, where you could bypass the courts by using professionals, lawyers, financial specialists, mental health specialists, is really a system that's reserved for those with resources. If you don't have resources, if you're a poor family, the court is your first stop when there's family conflict, whether it's divorce or more likely custody and child support. So there's really two systems now. There's the court system that is not always a friendly place, not always a welcoming place for parents and for children. And that's the only alternative for poor people without lawyers and without the resources to engage in collaborative and other kinds of divorce and conflict resolution.
A big part of the change you're writing about is, as you mentioned, the difference between thinking of divorce as an adversary legal proceeding and thinking of it more as a mediation. Is this primarily summarized by states switching their laws about, 40 years ago from requiring grounds for divorce to no-fault divorce?
Yes, that's one important legal development, and that made adversary procedures less necessary since it was no longer necessary to identify a party who is at fault. The second, I think, really important factor legally was the move from a sole custody paradigm to more of a post-separation co-parenting. So instead of choosing one parent over the other to have, you know, the primary role in raising the children after divorce, the current legal regime really favors the continued involvement of both parents. And so to do that, the thought has been that parents need to be able to cooperate, collaborate, co-parent after the divorce or separation, and the adversary process doesn't lend itself to encouraging that sort of cooperation.
Jane, you look like you wanted to jump in.
No, I was going to say, in addition to no-fault divorce, that the preference for joint custody has certainly contributed to this change in process. It's also encouraged the participation, I think, of other professionals in the divorce process. As Janice said, mental health specialists and others who help the family through the process of reorganizing after divorce.
On WIPR, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with law professors Jane Murphy and Janice Singer. We're talking about their new book, Divorced from Reality, Rethinking Family Dispute Resolution. You write that marriage has declined in recent decades, but parenthood has not. And so that means what? Most of the cases that come before family court involving children are not divorces, are not dissolving marriage.
That's right. That's right. As you said, the demographic information about the decline in marital birth, so now
40%.
40% of children are born to unmarried parents. Marriage rates have declined, particularly among those with less education, less income. There's also a racial dimension to it. So we knew about all these changes in family formation, but we were surprised to see as we kind of combed through court data that that has translated to many more non-marital families in court. So, for example, in Baltimore City in the circuit court, 83% of the families involved in custody and visitation cases were unmarried parents in 2014. That's a high number.
And you write about some of the implications of that in terms of couples who really haven't been together that long and haven't been parenting together that long.
Exactly. And some who have never parented together. So while we've had these significant demographic changes, in many ways, the court system is still built around the model of a divorcing nuclear family. Many of the programs that the courts have set up to move from an adversarial to a more collaborative divorce process are really geared towards divorcing families. And one of the recommendations that we make in the book is that courts need to rethink some of these programs and restructure them so that they're more responsive to the needs, for example, of parents who have never parented together and really may need a different kind of parenting course, a different kind of mediation than a divorcing couple that has been married and, you know, parented together for, you know, a decade.
You present evidence, as you mentioned, Jane, that adversarial proceedings on balance are not good for children or parents. And yet, you seem to express some regret about the diminished role of lawyers. If these aren't going to be adversarial contests, why shouldn't people skip hiring a lawyer and paying that money?
Well, they still involve, as a default, legal standards. And people, in order to negotiate in an informed way and to participate in this new kind of collaborative conflict resolution, need to understand what the law says about custody, child support, and other areas, you know, property if that's involved. So they aren't processes that one should engage in without the assistance of lawyers. So we're concerned about the lack of lawyers for these non-marital families in court, and we encourage parties who are involved in even these non-court proceedings to continue to have the assistance of lawyers.
I think that initially some of the court reformers who were advocating for these less adversarial processes thought that lawyers would become irrelevant. And I think what our research suggests is, as Jane said, lawyers are still really important, but their roles are different. So their roles, their counseling role becomes much more important. Their role in advising clients of the various possible ways to resolve their family dispute. What's the difference between mediation and arbitration and collaborative law? Lawyers still play a role in reviewing agreements that parties reach during a mediation. So we have some recommendations for law schools about the sorts of skills that they ought to be teaching law students when
what's an example of a skill that a lawyer may not come out of law school today but should come out with?
For example, we at the University of Baltimore have many courses in trial advocacy, but we're just beginning to have more courses about problem solving, negotiation, other skills that are perhaps more central to the new dispute resolution regime.
Also, communicating with clients and sharing responsibility with clients. So clients may want lawyers to do parts of their divorce or separation, but not take over the whole thing. And so lawyers learning to share their dispute resolution, their conflict resolution role with clients is another thing that law schools haven't traditionally emphasized. So client counseling and dispute resolution counseling, those are things I think both of our schools have begun to put more focus on these areas. You know, it's not all about litigation, although that is still an important backstop, but it's also about, you know, mediation and counseling and negotiation.
You've traced quite a bit of change over several centuries, but even in the last 25 years. Looking 25 years ahead, where do you think things in family law are going to be?
Well, I think the Supreme Court's recent decision for marriage equality is going to have a tremendous impact on family law. We have things like the marital presumption that established legal parenthood based on assumptions about opposite sex marriage that will no longer hold. I think in general, marriage equality will stabilize families, will give families the protection that it's needed under the law, but there's going to be a period of rapid sorting out, I think, under the law.
So I'll be a little provocative, because another of the recommendations that we make is that some of this non-adversarial dispute resolution might be better placed outside the court system in the community. So one of the things that I would hope that might happen in family law is, instead of requiring everybody to go to court in order to get a divorce or to resolve a parenting issue arising out of separation, that we could put into the community dispute resolution services, mediation services, so that families who are in conflict don't have to necessarily go to a system that many view as not only unfriendly, but potentially hostile. And so there have been some efforts in Australia to bring some of this dispute resolution outside the court system, and an interesting pilot project actually in Denver, where there would be a center in the community that could help families resolve disputes without having to go to court. That might be something that we see 25 years from now.
Congratulations on the book.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Jane Murphy is the Lawrence M. Katz Professor at the University of Baltimore School of Law. Janice Singer is Professor of Law at the University of Maryland's Francis King Carey School of Law. Their new book is Divorced from Reality: Rethinking Family Dispute Resolution. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. More of this interview there, too. I'm Sheila Cast, ahead on Maryland Morning. Tom talks to Chef Sasha. Stay with us on 88.1.